This week, February 17th, 2015, on The Digital Story. Hanging out with the Lumix luminaries. The TDS Bodhi Workshop Preview. Perfect Browse 9. All of this and more with yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. I'm thrilled to have you here with me. I have some terrific items for you today. We have a roundtable discussion with a couple Lumix luminaries. I think you're going to enjoy it, and I'll tell you more about that in a second. I'm going to talk a little bit about an application from OnOne Software called Perfect Browse 9. And the reason why I'm bringing it up is I think it might dovetail very well with Photos for Mac OS X and fill the gap. Yeah, and especially for Aperture users that are used to having ratings and metadata and stuff like that. I'm going to talk about that in the weekly update, actually. And then going to wander out to the Eastern Sierra and give you a little preview for the Bodhi workshop that's coming up in June. And I have other bits and bobs, of course, and a snapshot, all of that in this week's show. But let's get started with the weekly update. Is Perfect Browse 9 the answer to our photos workflow? So I've been testing an application by OnOne Software called Perfect Browse 9, and it's also in the suite that they offer, and you can get it as a standalone app. So if you don't want to buy the whole OnOne suite, which is terrific, by the way, but if you don't want the whole suite, but you're interested in this app after I've talked about it, you can get it as a standalone app also. Now, the reason why I'm talking about Perfect Browse 9 is because as we look at photos for Mac OS X and how it's shaping up, and to refresh your memory, this is the iPhoto replacement. This is what we're going to be left with from Apple after Aperture goes away also. Now, you notice I'm not saying Aperture replacement anymore because I don't really think it is. I think it's an iPhoto replacement, and I talked about this extensively in last week's podcast. So if you haven't heard it yet, you might want to go listen to that. But it does have a lot of cool stuff, and I'm talking about photos for OS X, but it also has some glaring omissions. Well, what's interesting to me about Perfect Browse 9 is that that app seems to complement photos for OS X, especially for enthusiast photographers that are used to being able to star rate their photos, add color labels, have control over metadata, import GPS, all that kind of stuff. And so what I did was I downloaded Perfect Browse 9, and I actually created a workflow where I used Aperture instead of Photos for OS X on the receiving end just to see how this would work. And it was very interesting. So what happens with Perfect Browse is that you launch the application and then it can read memory cards, hard disks, your photo stream. It can read just about anything, displays all the thumbnails. It's a little bit like Bridge, Adobe's Bridge. You can also double-click on a thumbnail, get a larger version, all that kind of stuff. And then you can apply star ratings via keyboard shortcuts. You can apply color labels, and you can apply favorites. You can also add metadata, description, author, copyright, all the IPTC stuff that we're used to doing in Aperture and Lightroom. So you can just do all that. You don't even have to move them onto your computer. I've done this where the card is just in the computer, the thumbnails are up on the screen, and I'm doing all this stuff. Then you filter the images. Let's say that you had 100 images on the card, and you like 30 of them, you gave them, let's say, 3 stars. And those are the ones that you actually want to move into Lightroom, Aperture, or Photos for OS X. So then you select them, and the way I do it is I just filter, give me 3 stars or above, which you can do in Perfect Browse 9. Select them, and then there's a command that says import them into Aperture, import them into Lightroom. import them into other application. And I'm hoping that on one goes, yeah, Photos for OS X is going to be one of those applications. So then they go into Aperture in this case, just like a regular import. So Perfect Browse hands them off to Aperture. They go in there. Aperture creates a project. All the images are in the project. You click on the project. You see all the shots there with the star ratings, with the color labels, and with the metadata that you added in Perfect Browse 9. It is really slick. It works really well. And the application is fast. It does a great job of just allowing you to go boom, boom, boom through your images. Now, the reason why I think this could be a nice complement to Photos for OS X, what it doesn't have, at least based on what we've been told to this point, it doesn't have star ratings, it doesn't have color labels, and it doesn't really have extensive control over metadata. So if you use Perfect Browse 9 to import your photos, add the metadata, do all that stuff, then send them over to Photos for OS X, then you can take advantage of, you know, all the cloud services and the cool editing tools and all the neat stuff that comes with Photos for OS X without giving up, you know, being able to rate, sort your images, all that. So I think it's very interesting. On One offers a 30-day free trial. You can test it out. It's also part of their overall suite. If you already have that, then you already have this application. The one thing I want to mention is that there's also a basic version of the app in the Mac App Store. Don't buy that. The reason why is because it's got a major bug in it that prevents the transfer from Perfect Browse to Aperture or Lightroom or whatever. So it's no good. It's no good right now. So you don't even want to mess with that. But if you're interested in this and you don't already have it, then download the 30-day free trial, play with it, and see what you think. My thinking is, if it's going to go into Aperture, it's going to go into Photos for OS X, and I'm sure On One is checking this out. The source of this story is me, the digital story, and of course I have a link to it in the show notes. Moving along, what else do we have in the weekly update? Sigma announced the pricing for their 24mm f1.4 art lens and for the 150 to 600mm contemporary lens. We heard about these lenses. We got all excited about them for good reason. They're both terrific lenses, especially the 24mm art lens that will work on full-frame cameras. And the pricing is not bad at all. For the 24mm Sigma art lens, it's going to be $849. And for the 150 to 600mm contemporary lens, $1,089 respectively. They announced that, I believe, on February 11th. Not terrible prices at all for the quality of those lenses. And that is this week's weekly update. Story number one, hanging out with the Lumix luminaries. So this is a blast. I had both Joseph and Julio, both of them are Lumix luminaries, come by the studio and we sat around the table. And what I did was I put my Zoom recorder right in the middle of the table and I set it up for this sort of stereo surround sound because I didn't want to come up to the podcasting room and chat with them because that wasn't what I was looking for. I was really looking for you being able to sit in on a conversation with us and really feel like you're there, you know, and not in a recording studio. So this would be a great segment for you to put your headphones on because the stereo separation is fantastic. And you literally can hear us in the different places around the room. The Zoom recorders are really good at allowing you to do this. Now, we talk about Micro Four Thirds cameras, obviously. Julio's really into 4K video, shooting it with the LX 100. He talks about taking still frames out of 4K video and is that a viable technique. We talk about lenses. We talk about all sorts of great stuff. And I just let the recorder run. This is not censored at all. It just rolls and it's a blast. So enjoy, put on your headphones, and I'll let the guys take it from here, and then I'll come back after we're done with this chat. So I'm here with a couple of luminaries, and why don't you guys introduce yourselves, say what you're up to, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Micro Four Thirds photography.
Awesome. Well, hey, Derek, good to see you again. This is Photo Joseph. Most of, some of your listeners have probably heard me before prattling on TWIP or on my own site, on formerly Aperture Expert, now the Photos Expert, future God knows what it's going to be. But we're here today to talk about the Lumix Shoot Anything Tour that we're on right now and talk about these awesome cameras that we're working with. I'm here with my friend Julio.
Yeah, I'm Julio Shorio. This is my first time, so thank you for having me on. And I'm a commercial photographer that's been shooting full-time for over 4 years with Micro Four Thirds and hanging out with Joseph on his tour and just, having a good time.
Awesome.
Yeah,
that's terrific. I'm so glad. You guys, you're touring all over the place and you're doing, a stop here in Santa Rosa, California. So
yeah, why not? Only an hour north of San Francisco. Pretty sweet place you got here.
Yeah, this is a cool little place, man.
Yeah. So we're downstairs. Normally, I record upstairs in the recording room, but we're downstairs just hanging around the table here. We've got cameras and lenses out on the table.
It's like a smorgasbord of gear.
Photography salad.
Yeah, it is. So I'm going to, distract them and chew them out, and hopefully they'll forget a few pieces before they go. Let's talk about what we got on the table, and then we'll kind of get into stuff. What are you guys shooting with these days?
Yeah, well, one of my favorite little cameras to carry around is this new Lumix GM5. This is a teeny tiny little Micro Four Thirds camera. It's quite literally pocket-sized. It comes with a little zoom kit lens, but I tend to put on there. Why don't you hand that to me real quick? I tend to work with this 15mm Leica f1.7 lens. It's a nice focal length. It equals 30mm in full frame speak. And this is a incredibly sharp, really nice little lens. And this makes for one beautiful kit. And that's what I carry around with me pretty much everywhere I go.
Yeah, I get, so I can't show you guys this lens right now, but I just want you to hear that. Those are click stops for the apertures on the front there, and I'm really digging this. I know a couple of the other Panasonic lenses have that also, and this lens looks really nice on the GM5, but I have to say, so does my 35-100 compact zoom on there. And I got to make sure Joseph takes that off his camera before he before he leaves here. Yeah. And you have the LX100 there.
Yeah, I have a GM5 as well in red, which is my favorite color, and mm-hmm. And I use it as part of my everyday attire, and it just happens to be a beautiful camera and a fully capable camera. I'm a big fan of the GM5, but I'm also really, really big fan of shooting 4K video, pulling frames, making animated portraits. So the closest thing I can get to the GM5 with 4K is the LX100. And I love this. I think this is a camera that I've been using most on this tour, between the 4K video, the click stop.
That sounds good. I have the headphones on. It sounded really nice.
Just like the Leica 15, and I love the external controls.
That's all right.
Pizza's here. Should we just continue?
Hang on a second.
Okay.
Hola. I can take in the window.
I don't want to do too much, man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have a great day.
Yeah.
So this is funny. I'm just going
to
leave this rolling.
Cool.
Yeah. So that was a Canon lens that just went out the door there that I just sold on Amazon.
That is a sign of the times, man.
It seemed appropriate, doesn't it?
Does it seem appropriate?
Yeah. And I think that's becoming commonplace for a lot of people.
I know. I keep threatening to sell my gear. I got to do it.
Dude, why don't you do that? Taking just an awesome vacation.
Seriously.
The money, this is a little bit of digression, then we'll get back, because I got a 4K question for you. But I have to tell you, the money that I'm raising right now, mm-hmm. selling, my excess Canon gear, I'm going to hang on a couple things still. But, there's a lot of stuff. For instance, I don't need the 100mm Canon macro anymore. I have a great macro lens for Micro Four Thirds that works fantastic. And, it goes on and on. That money that I'm making for that will fund all of my equipment purchases for this year, in my budget.
Amazing.
Isn't that great? Yeah. So I don't have to worry about equipment purchases this year. Something new catches my eye that, fits within what I need.
Now I just buy it. I have the slush fund for it.
Nice.
Fantastic.
I know. Isn't that? That's a good feeling.
It is.
Anyway, back.
So that LX100, yeah.
Back to the LX100. You know, you were talking a little bit earlier about, pulling frames out of the video and all that. Can you tell us a little bit about that? I think a lot of people are curious about, how good is it and is it really a practical workflow and all that?
Well, it's certainly a practical workflow depending on your intended purpose. I always tell people I was shooting editorial portraits with a DSLR in 2005. It was a 5-megapixel camera, and I had clients that loved it, never got pushback. But each frame of the 4K video is over 8 megapixels, so you're dealing with a fairly high resolution image. So what I'll do is I'll capture 4K video of, we were actually by the Bay Bridge, I was shooting cyclists coming by, panning. And then I could just kind of scrub back in camera and I could pull that frame of video out. Now, if you're doing it in camera with Lumix cameras like the LX100 that has a 4K photo mode, you also get metadata. Mm-hmm. So when you import in Lightroom, Aperture, wherever you want, you get all your metadata.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it helps with certain types of photography like decisive moment, or I was doing some video of your cat or my cats and things that may be tricky to shoot, even with continuous frame advance. You can get it at 30 frames a second. But for me, I kind of go above and beyond that. I go into what's called a more of like a hybrid photography. So I'm shooting video for the purpose of stills, but then I also capture audio. And then I also, of course, I have the video to use as well.
Interesting.
So I'm kind of creating multimedia, different pieces of multimedia from one capture.
How are you dealing with the, with the file management? I mean, obviously you're gathering a lot of content here. Mm-hmm. And you have to manage that and you have to store that. How are you doing? How do you work the 4K in with your workflow there?
Yeah, that's a little sloppy right now.
it is for all of us.
I think it's funny. Some time ago, I was thanks to in part to Joseph, I was getting ready to switch back to Aperture, which I had used years ago. Mm-hmm. But then thanks to Apple, I decided not to switch back to Aperture. So I'm kind of stuck with Lightroom. I kind of dump everything in the Lightroom. Mm-hmm. Lightroom kind of plays back to video okay if you got a fast drive.
Mm-hmm.
And you can do your star ratings and pull frames and whatnot. But that's where it starts. But it's a little sloppy right now. There's not a good reason or not a good way to do it. It doesn't take up a lot of memory. The video clips are fairly well compressed and the compression algorithms are, I find, to be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Size, space on my drives, it doesn't take that much more space than shooting JPEGs and RAW.
And then, in terms of the image, is this an image when you pull it out of 4K? Obviously, it's good for web and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Is it something beyond web? I mean, could you do print with it? Or
some people make prints. In fact, when we go up to Pro Photo Supply in Portland, they have made a 60-inch print from a 4K file from a GH4. And I have to see this in person to believe it. Personally, I've made a demo for Panasonic. I think it was 16x20s on the spot right there from an Epson printer. And they look pretty good. Now you're shooting it in basically an 8-bit color JPEG. So certain types of work, like really high detailed landscape, you're gonna lose detail in like the gradations of skies and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But for what I do, portraits, it works out really well.
Nice.
Now I want you to understand this: I shoot specifically for screens.
Yeah.
I have never sold a print in my entire life. It's just not my business model. Right. Yeah. So for the type of photography that I do, it's fantastic.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah.
One of the things that you need to watch out for if you are going to shoot like that is if you're thinking video, if you shoot video, usually you're shooting at a 30th or a 60th of a second, right? And that's your shutter speed. And if you're shooting anything moving and pulling a still frame out of that, it's going to be a little bit soft. Mm-hmm. You're going to have that motion blur. And on the video side, that's desirable. It makes it blend together, looks really nice and smooth. But if you want to freeze action, then you just like shooting stills, you want to make sure you have that high shutter speed. You have a thousandth or 2,000ths or 4,000ths or 8,000ths of a second, so you can freeze that. And when you shot the bikes going by today, that was probably it was full sun. It was probably at 4,000ths of a second.
But I was using the specific 4K photo mode, and that is intended to pull frames, and it will give you a higher shutter speed by default. But then the other issue is, okay, so maybe you're getting more of a staccato look to your video. And then you have to decide, again, what is your intended output? So if you're shooting video to pull frames, shoot the 4K photo mode, but you're not going to get that smooth cinematic look if that's what you want aesthetically for your video. I'm okay having more of a staccato look for my video, mm-hmm. personally. Mm-hmm. You know, so I shoot most everything in 4K photo mode.
I mean, I think it comes down to what we're always faced with, which is what is our priority at the moment.
Right.
You know, and mm-hmm. because we have to decide that between ISO and noise and aperture and depth of field, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's something that we're used to doing. What's interesting is that we have a new set of options that we didn't have before. So now, Joseph, you're more of a still shooter,
right?
So, you know, as you've moved over from, and I'm trying to remember what you shot with before. You were a Canon mm-hmm. shooter, and you've moved into this. Yeah, one of the things I've wondered is, what are you doing with lenses and all that sort of stuff? I mean, are you as comfortable now as, let's say, that you were 2 years ago with Canon, with your lineup? And if so, what tools are making that possible? What are you really grooving on right now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, as a luminary, I'm fortunate enough to have access to all the lenses. But sure. Certainly there's a bunch of them in my bag that are just there to show people, and there's ones that I use every day. The standard workhorse zooms would be your 24-70 and 70-200 range, right? So you've got with Micro Four Thirds, as I'm sure many of your listeners know, whatever number is on the lens, you double that. So a 12-35 is a 24-70 equivalent. A 35-100 is a 70-200 equivalent. And those are both f2.8 fixed aperture lenses. So they're a little on the larger side for mirrorless cameras, mm-hmm. right? They're still half the size and weight of the Canon gear, but they're on the larger side for this stuff. And those are incredibly sharp, really crisp, really easy to use, just beautiful, beautiful glass. And they're designed from the ground up for both video and stills. So when I do manage to push the red button, as Julio is always trying to encourage me to do, push the red button. Go
please,
video.
For God's sake.
For the love of God, push the red button.
No lasers will shoot out, I promise.
When I do push the red button, those are absolutely ideal lenses for it. But I don't do that often. So in the studio, I am often shooting with a 24-70 equivalent. My favorite lens to shoot with in the studio, if I'm doing a portrait, is the 42.5, so it's an 85mm f1.2 Noctocron lens, which is kind of ridiculously awesome.
We know that lens. Yeah, we all know that lens by reputation. Not many of us have it in our bag.
That is a gorgeous, gorgeous lens. So that's by far my favorite lens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like shallow depth of field, as I know many photographers do, and that's, I'm always leaning towards lenses that are really, really fast. So that lens, the 15mm f1.7, if I want something a bit wider, and then a 25 f1.4, I believe it is, which is then a 51.4 equivalent, that is another, you know, everyday carry around lens.
Well, that is interesting. That 25 1.4 Panasonic, that's what I use upstairs. That's what I have on the camera all the time.
Okay.
And then I'll switch to something else if I need to. But mm-hmm. I basically have it in aperture priority at f1.4, and then if I have to do something else, I'll do it.
But right.
That is just really a great knock around. And I shoot existing light up there a lot. I have a big north window with light coming in. I have a bunch of reflectors, and a lot of times that's all I need.
Right.
That lens is also very sharp.
Yeah, that it is. That it is. And as far as the camera bodies themselves in the studio, the GH4 is the flagship body. That's your biggest body. That's the one that does the 4K video. In the interchangeable lens size, the 4K, and that's a very, very capable, very robust body, and that's what I use in the studio. I'm syncing that with my pro photos. I'm shooting the vast majority of my work, and almost all my professional work is done on there.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's smaller bodies that are great for travel and carrying around, like the GM5, which just fits in your pocket. Mm-hmm. So different cameras for different use, for sure.
So, you know, the big thing that people ask me about when I first started on the Micro Four Thirds thing, basically was the soft background, right? But, you know, because you have a smaller sensor,
right,
and it's a little bit harder to drop that background right out. And granted, in the beginning it was, right, before we saw some of the more advanced lenses. Is that something that's important to you? And if so, how are you coping with that, you know, in the smaller sensor?
Well, sure. It's like you said, with the smaller sensor, you get less bokeh, less blur in the background on any given focal length and aperture. Mm-hmm. So that 24-70 and 70-200 f2.8 aren't going to be quite as shallow depth of field as a 24-70 or 70-200 mm-hmm. f2.8 on a full frame DSLR.
Right.
But when you still get it, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, it's just like any other camera. The closer you get, the longer your focal length, the more shallow depth of field. So mm-hmm. like I just did a portrait of you sitting here with this little 35-100 mm-hmm. at f5.6. And it's super soft background, but I'm also quite close, long focal length, and so on.
By the way, I've been able to drop the background out with that little guy.
It's great.
Yeah, and I think there's something in the lens design too. I feel like the lens design is evolving on the Micro Four Thirds side, you know, around that.
So then, if you really need that super shallow, then there are those lenses that have the f1 something go to the aperture, primes. Right? You can go to the primes and get that really, really big aperture that'll give you that.
Yeah. And that's what I do. I mean, when I need it, I go to the primes. I have not had a problem with the primes at all.
Oh, you know? Gorgeous.
You know, that's really nice. Yeah. You're going to say something.
Yeah, I was going to say that the lenses, you know, because this is a digital system from the ground up. The lenses have firmware in it that talks directly to the camera body. Mm-hmm. And so they do things like distortion correction and whatnot, which is why when you bring the raw files into Lightroom, you don't necessarily have all the corrections you would, say, for a Canon lens. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that helps with bokeh. It helps remove uneven skinning and that kind of stuff, actually in the raw data. But it's kind of dependent on the lens.
Sure.
But what I do in studio is, because I'm shooting a lot of 4K, and I also shoot stills, in studio I light everything with my Felix LEDs.
Mm-hmm.
So that although the LEDs are getting less output than a flash, which is ideal, because if it's a constant light with the power of a flash, no one's going to have their eyes open.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm able to, you know, combine that lower power, the color tunability, and then of course using a lens like the Leica 15 or the Noctocron, which is my favorite lens, and get completely soft backgrounds if I want, and shallow depth of field and portraits.
So. I switched to LEDs too upstairs. I love them.
Man, it's so easy.
Everyone's happy. I mean, that's what I say. Everyone's happy. And now that they have the diffusion built into them, you know, I don't even have to fool around with diffusers or anything. I use photodiox, but you know, same sort of thing.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to talk about the correction thing, and I hope I'm not putting you guys on the spot
here. No, not at all.
This is something that I'm actually a little confused about at times. Mm-hmm. So my understanding, you know, with the in-camera lens correction, let's say for distortion and stuff like that, that definitely that's applied to the JPEGs. Where I've been a little confused is that applied to the raw files also, or, you know, how does that handle?
Yes and no. So if and here's a great way, if anybody wants to see what their Micro Four Thirds lenses are really putting out, is if you take the raw file has the correction data in it, it's up to the raw processor to actually apply the data or not. So Lightroom does it. I believe Aperture would. You would know. You guys would know more than I would. But C1 Pro does not.
Okay.
So C1 Pro, like if you like, I was a big fan of the Olympus 12-20 and a 45-18 until I got them in the C1 Pro, and then it was like barrel distortion city.
And you're talking about Capture One.
Capture One Pro.
Yeah.
So it doesn't. It just ignores the data. So then you can see the true performance of your Micro Four Thirds lens.
Oh,
and that's where things get very interesting.
That is
so
very interesting.
So if you try that with the Leica Brandon lenses, you'll see less distortion typically in the Leica Brandon lenses than you would, say, in a non-Leica Brandon lens.
Interesting.
Yeah, so if you really want to see what the lens is really doing, put it in a Capture One Pro and play with it.
So, you know, in one way, I mean, I love that exercise to see. And at another level, you go, well, The camera and the lenses are sort of designed to work together.
Right.
So, you know, it's an exercise. But the bottom line is, if your raw files look good,
then you're there. Exactly.
Then you're there. But I never really, I mean, that really clarifies things a lot for me. Mm-hmm. So the data does go with the raw file, and then it's up to the processor to be able to apply that data or not.
Correct.
Okay. All right. That's good stuff. Hey, what are you guys talking about on the tour right now? I mean, what's the stuff here?
Yeah, so the tour is called the Lumix Shoot Anything Tour, and unfortunately for the listeners, I think by the time you hear this, the tour will be done, but we are recording our sessions as we go, so you'll be able to see all those live, and we'll get the URL and put that up on the screen, but we made a bit.ly for it, make it nice and easy, just bit.ly/LumixShootAnything, and you can also check up on any of the social networks. You can see us with the hashtag LumixShootAnything, you can see the stuff that we did. But the whole point of this tour is to show that the cameras are capable of shooting, well, anything. And so we have 5 official stops on the tour. We stopped in, we started in Santa Barbara at Sammy's, then went back down to LA at Sammy's. Yesterday we were at Keeble and Shuckett in Palo Alto.
Right. Oh, isn't that a great store?
That's a cool store.
Yeah.
And then Saturday, we're in Portland at Pro Photo Supply.
I'm excited for that.
That's going to be a fun
time. Me too. I've heard good things about that store. I haven't been
there. Oh, I've done a workshop there. So they have a great place to do workshops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. And so that's Pro Photo in Portland.
Pro Photo in Portland.
Yeah.
And then Monday, we're at Kenmore in
which
Seattle.
Which is gigantic.
Uh-huh. Is it?
Yeah. Yeah. It used to be a grocery store.
Oh, no kidding.
They outfitted it. Yeah, it's like, you know.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Clean up on aisle 4 lenses.
lenses scattered.
Yeah.
So the format of the show, and if, again, if people want to see it, since they're not going to be able to come live by the time they hear this, go to that URL and you'll see, like I said, we've been recording the shows. You'll be able to see it there. The format of it is we, after a little introduction, we go through a whole series of types of photography, and we take turns going back and forth, showing work from that category of our own work and talking about which gear we use for it, why we use it, how it applies, and so on. So we start off with hybrid photography that Julio talks about. I go into landscape photography. We cover macro and low light and portrait and studio and commercial and sports. And I feel like I'm leaving something out.
You said macro, travel, night.
Oh, travel. I missed travel. Okay. That's the one, yeah.
Travel,
oh, and street. Travel and street. Like, yeah,
travel and street.
They kind of blend into each other.
Tend to blend. But we have a real format that we're going through. But the point is we want to make sure we cover all of those.
Sure.
So people can see that, yeah, you know what? I shoot that and that. Oh, I need to do a bit of that.
Uh-huh.
I really can use these cameras for all
that. And we have unreleased gear also that with us that's not out yet. So,
oh, that's always nice. That's sweeten the pot a little bit.
So whoever's listening to this won't be able to see it, but you know, we're going to show it to you here.
Nice.
Before we leave.
Cool.
So what kind of, I mean, are you getting like any pushback going, you know, where people are challenging you a little bit this
premise? No, actually, no one's challenging it, which is a difference because I think even a year ago, you're getting more challenged.
Yeah,
people on podcasts going, oh, yeah, you can't do this, you can't do that.
Right.
And, you know, like any gear, there's gear that's designed for the job.
Sure.
Right? There's limitations to everything. In fact, a great sample of that is on Sunday last week, we met up with a buddy of mine, Richard Thompson, who is a automobile and fashion photographer and lifestyle photographer in Los Angeles. He shoots on a Phase One, right? So medium format, big, huge camera, big, huge files.
Right.
But that camera, as gorgeous and amazing as it is, isn't suited to everything. You can't shoot action with that.
No.
You know, forget about it. Right. So we went out with him and he did he was doing a little campaign and he put together a few shots with that camera and then grabbed the GH4 to do anything that was motion related, any action, car driving by, he was shooting an athlete and doing some jumping stuff with her, and he's going to blend all those shots together to build this photo story that he's doing, and it's great. It's, you know, you got to use the right tool for the job.
Sure.
So sure, there are things obviously that the Micro Four Thirds are not suited for, but for any normal shooter who's not doing that super high end commercial work, these cameras are fantastic. And it's not to say you can't do commercial work with them. There are just things that, you know, frankly, medium format 60 megapixel file might be better for, and that's fine.
I mean, I shot an assignment partly with the LX100 for Anheuser-Busch in December, you know, and there I was doing this major shoot at the GH4 when I needed it, but there was times when I just took out the LX100 and I shot with this, and no one cared.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because 2 years ago, I did have some client concern when I pulled it out, you know. In the last year, no one cares anymore. No one cares anymore. They, you know, it's so, you know, people figure, hey, I'm paying this guy a lot of money. He knows what he's doing.
Right.
And that's pretty much. So now I don't worry about pulling out whatever I need.
It really depends on what you're selling. I think there's a type of photographer that sells himself somewhat based on their gear. And there's other photographers that are selling a particular look or some would say vision. And that's what I'm selling. I'm selling an art that I happen to create with a camera. So, you know, if someone wants to learn about gear, they go to my blog. If they want to learn about my photography, they go to my portfolio site. And that's where my clients go, the portfolio site. So regardless of what I show up with, I have a red tripod, you know. No one cares. No one cares.
Right.
So
that's interesting. Well, this has been great. Any final thoughts from you guys before we start playing with lenses and cameras here?
I think, you know, I think the big thing for me in shooting Micro Four Thirds is that, as I mentioned earlier, that if you're carrying less and you're shooting more, you're creating more, you're having more fun, which means that you're going to end up becoming a better photographer because you're creating more. So, you know, if you can carry like this, I'm like looking at this GM5 and I'm like, man, I really want one of these. And I'm like, oh, I have one. So like, I got to start using it more because like that with like the Leica 15 and the kit lens. I mean, you have a tiny professional quality camera that looks like a toy that you can take anywhere and you'll never get any pushback because it's so cute looking.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
It's magical. Like,
and I was talking to you guys before we went on record here that was my experience in Cuba. Mm. That was my experience. And, you know, and I was fortunate enough to, you know, have a few people help me beforehand say, no, do not worry about taking the big cameras. Take your Micro Four Thirds. And yeah. I only went with Micro Four Thirds. And people just respond to you in a different way. It's less mm-hmm. threatening. And, you know, if you think about being on the other end of the camera, someone has this big old camera, the big old long lens, and they stick it right in your face.
Right.
That there is a weird vibe to that.
Absolutely.
You know, there is something to that. Whereas if you have something small and you're talking with them and you're shooting, everyone's more relaxed.
It breaks, if you're shooting portraits, it kind of breaks the human-to-human contact.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like having a conversation with somebody but putting a pillow in front of your face. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's just like there's
or putting a pillow in front of their face.
Right, yeah. Right. There's really. Like less of a human connection there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, as a final thought, I want to riff off something that Julio said about it being more fun. And mm-hmm. That is a huge part of this. You know, we get asked a lot, why do you shoot with these? And on a podcast recently, you might have actually been on this, Derek, I was asked, are these better than the Canon cameras or the Nikon? You know, they know that I switched, and are they better? And in some regards, sure, they are better. In some regards, maybe they're not. But that's not the point. I'm not using this because it's a quote-unquote better camera. One of the biggest reasons I use it is because it's more enjoyable. The cameras are frankly fun to work with. They're packed full of technology. Now, if they weren't great to begin with, if I couldn't get a great image, then it would be a non-starter. But I get a great image, right? I also get a great image out of a Canon camera. Mm-hmm. But these cameras are just fun. There's so much stuff in them, so many features built into these cameras, so much technology that it's a real joy to use. The fact that I can wirelessly push a picture to my iPhone and share it on Instagram, or even wirelessly tether it to my iPhone and control the camera from that is super cool. Things like time lapse is built into the camera. There are so many little features that are there that it's just a joy to use. And like Julio said, if you're using it more, you're shooting more, you're going to become a better photographer because that's how you get it. That's how you get better. You shoot. Yeah. No one got better by sitting indoors studying and reading workshops all day long and never actually going out and shooting. Mm-hmm. You got to get out and shoot. And if you enjoy it, you're going to do it more.
I could not agree more. And my saying is that fatigue is the enemy of creativity. Mm-hmm. And these, you know, cameras help with that. And I'm having more fun too. So, Joseph, Julio, thank you so much for coming by. It was a blast having you here.
For sure.
All right. Well, let's break out some lenses, and I'll make sure I have URLs and all that stuff in the show notes. So just go over there and check out what they're doing on the Lumix Tour. It's pretty cool. What a blast. I hope you got to listen to it in stereo. I mean, normally I flatten the podcast to mono. I'm leaving it in stereo this week so you could enjoy that interview just as a special treat. I love hanging out with those guys, and I thought the conversation was cool, and I love the way it sounds. All right, let's move on. Let's get on to the screening room. Let's take a stroll over to the screening room. Today's selection, screening room selection, is WordPress Essential Training with Morten Rand Hendrickson. Now, the reason why I selected this one, because it's not technically a photography title. However, more and more photographers are using WordPress as the back end for their photography websites, for their blogs. And it has a lot of plugins that are terrific for this. So I thought, okay, since WordPress is so popular with photographers, why not feature a training where you can really learn some of the ins and outs of WordPress and either improve your site that you have right now, or if you're thinking about building one with WordPress, really get a good start to it. So this title is perfect for that, and Morten does a great job of teaching you about WordPress. So you can watch him in action by visiting the TDS screening room, which is at lynda.com/thedigitalstory, LYNDA.com. And while you're there, you can start your 7-day free trial to watch all of Morten's movies, plus every other title in the library, including more than 20 by yours truly. Story number 3. Hey, a preview for the TDS workshop in Bodie in the Eastern Sierra. So this is coming up on June 11 through 13. It's actually going to be more like June 10, because I think we're going to do the thing the evening before. June 11 through 13 is the official workshop days in the Eastern Sierra. So those folks on the reserve list have already received their registration forms. If you were on the reserve list and you haven't received your registration form, check your inbox, and I can always send you another one. Just send me an email, derek@thedigitalstory.com, and I'll get it right out to you. And they've had a crack at it now for, I think, almost 2 weeks. So now I can open it up to the rest of our audience. This workshop is going to be terrific. It's going to be 3 days of shooting and exploring and lab work and sharing pictures with one another and hanging out in the Eastern Sierra, going to the Bodie Ghost Town, which is just this amazing place, frozen in time, going to Mono Lake. We're going to do a twilight shoot at Mono Lake, which is just a great place to be at twilight. I love being there, and we'll be there and we'll be taking shots. We're going to do some environmental portraiture because the environment is so cool. You have kind of this old kind of ghost town look. You have, you know, these little towns that are frozen in time. You have all this fun stuff. We have a great place to stay. It's going to be at the Silver Maple Inn in Bridgeport. And what's so cool about it is that they have this house that's right in the middle of it, an 1800s house called Kane House. That is where we get to have our workshop meetings, where we're going to have our lab work and our preview and everything. And this house is cool. What they do is in the morning, they use it for breakfast. So they serve breakfast in there. It's got this great front room, you know, with all this, you know, with all the throw down rugs and old furniture and everything. And then they're going to close it after they serve breakfast, tidy it up a bit. And then it's available to us for the rest of the day to have our workshop meetings and our lab work in there. So what we're going to do is we're going to be shooting in the morning. Then we'll have workshop meetings in Kane House. And then on some of the nights, we'll go out for twilight shoot afterwards. And we're going to eat good food. And I'll tell you, it's just a natural high being in the Eastern Sierra anyway. So if you're interested in all this sort of stuff and you did not have a chance to get on the reserve list, it's not too late. We still have seats open. We blew through about half the seats already on the reserve list, and I'm sure a few more will sign up soon. But we still got a few seats, so it's not a problem. Just go to the TDS Workshops page, which is thedigitalstory.com/workshops, and then there's a send me info form about halfway down. It only has 3 fields. It takes 10 seconds to fill out. Fill that out. Choose the Eastern Sierra workshop, and I'll make sure you get a registration form. And again, it's coming up. It's going to be in June of this year, June 11 through 13. I'm excited about it. We'll talk more about it later, but I just wanted to get it on your radar in case you were interested in joining us. Snapshot. This snapshot is called From the Bad. And I wrote a post about this on the Nimble Photographer too. So last Tuesday was just like this crazy day where everything went wrong. It was a big day for me because I was really sticking my neck out on the line talking about photos for OS X based on a conversation I had had with Apple. I was nervous about it, and it turned out to be rightly so. But I had all the information correct, and so whenever I have the information correct, I'm okay with that. But I wanted to get that podcast out to everyone because we have been waiting for information about where are we going to go after Aputure, where are we going to go after iPhoto. So I had that all queued up, and of course, there was a problem with the podcast feed. And I could not get the podcast published. I had it ready first thing in the morning, and I could not get it published. So I let everyone know through Facebook, through Twitter, all that. And I said, if you're getting it, let me know, because it was weird. It went out to some people and not to others and all this. So the next day, you know, first thing in the morning, I said, if you got it, let me know. If you didn't get it, let me know, all that. Let's figure this out. And with your help, with all the folks that responded, I was able to figure out the problem, track it down, get it fixed, and then I had it ready to go the next day, I don't know, by about 9 in the morning. And I was just really happy. No one complained. No one gave me grief about it. Everyone was just super helpful. And by being super helpful, I was able to solve the problem and get it done. And that just made me so thankful for this community that we have and, you know, how supportive they are. And so, first of all, my heart was singing just by the way all of you responded. Then beyond that, though, there was just all this other crazy stuff. I was having problems with my son's teacher, professor. He was deathly sick, could not go in for a major test that was like half his grade. And she was saying that there's no makeup tests. And I could not send him in because not only was it not good for him, he would have infected the whole class. He had this terrible flu. So I contacted her. She worked with me, and we got it worked out. I had a friend who was just going through this terrible situation and was having this horrible time. She managed to reach down, really found some inner strength, and solved the problem. It was just on and on. It was just like that all day. And at the end of the day, I was just totally worn out. It was like a Tuesday, Wednesday, totally worn out at the end of both days. And I wrote this piece. I think I wrote it on Wednesday. I just said, here all these things went wrong. And here the upshot of all of them was that everybody showed their best side. Things like that really affirm, you know, my faith in people. You know, we don't always have these great days and the outcome isn't always as good. But, you know, on this day, I saw the best side of people in some very difficult times. And it was a nice counterbalance to what we see on the news and what we hear with gossip and all that sort of stuff. And I just wanted to share that with you. And that is this week's snapshot. All right, let's do a little virtual camera club news and wrap this baby up. So our photo assignment for February is goodbye. It's the final photo assignment. Then we're going to move into something new, but you have to the end of the month to submit any sort of image that you want that feels like goodbye. And then Sizzle Picks, who sponsors the photo assignment and sponsors the site, they're in the middle of their President's Day sale right now. 20% off a Sizzle Picks or 25% off an entire shipment if you order more than one. Plus, shipping is still free in the contiguous U.S. And this is an exclusive offer just for us. And all you have to do is write TDS20 or TDS25 in the comment space on the Sizzle Picks order page, and they will get that to you. Today, as I'm recording this, is Washington's birthday. As you're listening to us the day after, we're letting this run through the end of the week. You can get up to 25% off your Sizzle Picks. All you got to do is put TDS20 for one or TDS25 for two in the comments field. They'll take it right off the top. SizzlePix.com. It's like a retina display you can hang on the wall. And then the good folks over at Red River Paper, who have a rocking Facebook page, facebook.com/redriverpaper. If you like free paper, if you like goodies, you want to hang out there because they give a lot of paper away. And I was informed that the coupon code had expired that we had on our landing page. So if you click on the Red River tile on the digital story, it takes you to our exclusive landing page right there. John, I believe, dropped me a note, said, hey, I placed an order. Coupon code had expired. I really appreciate it. I wrote him back. He said, thank you so much for letting me know. Sent him a box of greeting card paper as a thank you for letting me know. Talked to Drew. Drew got it fixed. So we're back in business. Bottom line is, if you go over to our landing page right now, there's a code there that you can use and you get 10% off your order. Red River Paper. Everything from fine art note cards to just big sheets of beautiful paper, plus ink cartridges, plus envelopes, plus everything else that you need to output like a pro over there at Red River Paper. And you can get to all of that by clicking on the tile that's on every page of the digital story. Our longest running sponsor, and I just dig their stuff. All right, I think that's going to do it for this week. Wow, a lot of stuff. Hope you enjoyed the interview, the discussion, and I had a blast doing it. We're working on all sorts of great stuff. We're going to keep talking about alternatives and apps that work or hopefully work with Photos for Mac OS X. This is going to be an ongoing discussion, so make sure you hang out for that. And of course, we're always going to be into Nimble Photographer and Micro Four Thirds and mirrorless cameras. Come back next week. Until then, have a great week. Bye-bye now.